Welcome to the Mitch Hanks Show, originating four blocks from Wisconsin's capital. Mitch is the radio voice of uncommon sense. All sides of an argument are welcome here. Just be prepared to make one, as Mitch argues for truth, not victory. Politics, lifestyle, pop culture are all on the table. So get ready to participate on the Mitch Hanks Show.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Mitch Hanks Show on MedicineTalks.com, Facebook Live. We are here, and right under the chute, before we go to Tom Coburn, Bridget Mooney of the Jalamas Company online, because this massive free outdoor concert of the Green is tonight, the Wisconsin Youth Symphony Orchestra. Hello, Bridget.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. You're there on the grounds. We're just getting started. It's kind of an exciting night. Tell me about what people can still come out and see.
Well, right now, the concert grounds are open. People can set up their blankets and chairs, start their picnic, and then the music starts at 7 p.m. sharp. And then after the music, we have a big fireworks display.
That's right, and I think there's an ice cream stand there for Keep Wisconsin Warm as well, huh?
It's Shep's Ice Cream is the sponsor of that, and it's $5 for all-you-can-eat for an adult and $3 for children. Yes.
What a deal, man. Let's go to town.
Yes.
So tell me, the people, again, where this is. It's on the west, well, the Sauk Trails Office Park, but people think West Beltline, and they go off Old Sauk, right? Is that the best way to go? And Excelsior down John Q. Hammond's, yeah.
Yep, it's 1200 John Q. Hammond's Drive. That's where the entrance is, and right now, we have a full parking lot, so we have a lot of street parking and a little bit of overflow across the street in a parking lot in a building. And, yep, just welcome. Well, anyone's welcome.
Well, I'll be out there. I'm sure I can probably find a beverage somewhere. But, hey, thanks a lot, Bridget. I appreciate it.
Sure.
On the Green tonight, 5 to 9. We appreciate it very much, and we'll see you down there.
Okay, thanks, Mitch.
All right, take care. Thank you so much.
You
That's
too.
Bridget Mooney of the Jalamas Company. You got to head out. It's really cool. The Wisconsin Youth Orchestra, they're fantastic. It's a nice evening concert under the moonlight, and there's fireworks afterwards. It's kind of a cool thing. But Senator Tom Coburn, who was always one of my favorite senators from Oklahoma, doctor, retired now, but involved in other things. We'll get to it here. But I loved his Back to Black plan. I think he wanted to save like $9 trillion over 10 years, something like that. Got almost no press. Joins me now, Senator Coburn, hello.
Hey, how are you?
Good
to talk to you.
Good to have you on the show. And I used to love that, before we get into the current events, that were you trying to save $9 or $11 trillion? What was that you unveiled?
It was $9.8 trillion over 10 years.
$9.8 trillion over 10 years. And it might have gotten some coverage on C-SPAN, and I don't know who else covered it, but I thought it was a great thing, and you got very little press, I thought.
Well, that just fits with Washington. It's what our founders worried about. They worried about the politicians being so interested in themselves that they would create factions. And the more factions they created, the more division we would have. And we wouldn't be Americans anymore. We'd be members of certain factions, and so therefore we couldn't get along, so the republic wouldn't survive. And I wrote about it in a book that was released in May, and that's what's happening to us.
Well, exactly. I always thought you were the least political of almost any senator, because you always just cut right to the truth on that stuff, the unfunded liabilities of entitlement programs and all that stuff. You were right there.
Well, I didn't have any trouble telling the truth. I'm an accountant by training and experienced businessman, and then went to med school and was known as Grandpa in med school because I was so much older than everybody. But look, we have unfunded liabilities right now of $144 trillion. And that's not a number anybody can get their hands on.
Come on. I mean, what does that
so
mean?
That means it's $40 trillion more than the entire net worth of the country.
Well, I mean,
so let me explain to you what $1 billion is, because most people can't even get their hands around that. If you make $40,000 a year, You have to work 25 years to make $1 million. To make $1 billion, you would have to work 25,000 years. So, you know, we have Washington that talks all this stuff, but no action. It's all divided into factions. Nobody wants to actually say, it's okay if I lose a seat if I do what's good for the country in the long run. You don't hear that. You don't see it. You don't smell it. You don't taste it, except in very few individuals. And so what has to happen is we have to change that if we want our kids to have a future. If you take that, the next 50 years for what I just explained to you in unfunded liabilities, every millennial will have to pay out, every millennial, $32,000 a year just to cover mine and your Medicare and our Social Security.
Well, I think Medicare is supposed to be insolvent by the first year I'm eligible. I'm pretty sure that's right.
Well, but the insolvency means somebody has to pay for it. Or somebody has to loan us money, and at some point in time, people are going to quit loaning us money. Because we can't pay it back.
When that happens, go ahead.
Well, they just start printing more money, which means you have a $30,000 a year decrease in your standard of living. One way or the other, the government takes it from the citizens, and our liberty is gone.
See, we need, well, first of all, I think what happens is when a guy like you leaves, you need to become more powerful because you go into these campaigns and causes, like this Article 5, these conventions. Explain what's going on there. You want to shift power back.
Sure. You bet. The founders knew we would end up exactly where we are today. Matter of fact, Colonel George Mason stood up. The only area where Madison does not document heavy debate during the Constitutional Convention was when George Mason stood up and said, how many of you all know of any time in history where a government has voluntarily ceded its power back to its people? And, of course, nobody could name that. And he said, we have to have in this Constitution a way for the people, not the politicians, not the government, but the people to limit the power of the government. So they put in there Article 5, which requires two-thirds of the states to come together in an agreement to call what's called an amendments convention. And it's very limited, very specific. You can only have amendments on what you've applied for. And if you get those 34 states, which is two-thirds, then we can actually make the Congress responsive to us again and the bureaucracy. You know, we really don't have three branches of government. We have four. One is the unelected bureaucrats that direct 60% of the spending in Wisconsin from Washington.
Mm-hmm.
That your legislators don't have anything to do, don't have any power. They're powerless to control it.
Well, you know, we get
unless
less.
We,
go ahead.
Yeah, unless we redefine the Commerce Clause to what our founders intended it to be. So we don't have problems that aren't fixable. We have politicians that don't have the courage to fix them. And that's both parties.
Well, that's very true. I think, by the way, on that point about Wisconsin money from the feds, I think Senator Proxmire made so many people mad on that Golden Fleece Award that we were like last for a long time in getting federal pork. But, you know, that's part of the deal. But, you know, he's been...
Well, that's called leadership. You know, that's why the Bridge to Nowhere was so... People were so astounded that somebody would earmark $450 million for a bridge to 50 people on land that they had ownership in.
That's some bridge.
Yeah.
Well, and you...
And at the same time, we had Katrina.
That's
so anyhow, we have fixable problems. We just don't have the quality of leadership and the courage. Martin Luther described it as cowardice asks the question, is it expedient? And vanity asks the question, is it popular? And that's what I see in Washington. It's why I left 2 years early. I don't think we fix our problems in Washington. That's why I'm so hard involved in the Article 5.
Well, when you say amendments convention, though, are you going to be empowered, if it all goes well, to actually add constitutional amendments to the Bill of Rights?
No, you can't add anything. You can make recommendations to the states. The states have the power for that.
Oh, okay.
An amendment convention has no power whatsoever other than to make recommendations for changes in the Constitution. They have no power.
Well,
they have the same power as Congress of making a recommendation to the states. But they're actually more limited than the Congress because they can only make recommendations based on the application they make for the convention to be called. So that's in only three areas. One's on financial responsibility, like a balanced budget amendment with generally accepted accounting principles. The other would be limiting scope and jurisdiction of the federal government, i.e. reversing the interpretation of the Commerce Clause, and then limiting the terms of both appointed and elected officials in Washington.
Well, but so it's recommended, it's non-binding. So what level of optimism do you possess that would suggest that the Congress might do something that you would propose?
Well, Congress doesn't have anything to do with it. That's what's so great about it.
Well, then the states could then.
The states would. Well, I have a great deal of confidence. We now have 2.4 million volunteers with our Article 5 movement, which is all three of these points. We're going to grow that to 20 million by the time we get to 34 states. We're going to hold people accountable. And then we're going to have a campaign to do what's right, to return the liberty that's ours back to us. You know, for the last 20 years of my life, I'm almost 70 years old. The last 20 years of my life, Washington has totally told the American people what they'll do.
Right.
And our country was set up for the American people to tell Washington what we want done.
So if the states say you have a balanced budget amendment or you have to no more debt ceiling, no more clean debt ceiling bills, you got to make it revenue neutral, whatever the states say, then they can just make the federal government do what they want? Is that the deal?
Sure, especially if you change the Commerce Clause, because the Commerce Clause is where the federal government has power over the states. And so we have all this body of law. The original Constitution fits in your pocket, right?
Mm-hmm.
The annotated Constitution now weighs 84 pounds. And it's made up of laws that bureaucrats have written and judges have said that don't have any connection at all to what our founders believed were our inalienable rights to make decisions under a federalist system and a republican form of government.
Well, we need you to stay healthy is what we need, because you are one of a handful of people, on one hand I can count them, who talks about this stuff. You know, maybe Rand Paul could be a little bit pure in terms of the Senate on some stuff like this, but, you know, I don't know. I'm trying to think who else would be you know, at least
I'm healthy. I have dedicated the rest of my life to trying to get to save the future for my grandkids and yours. And I think we can cheat history. You know, we're well beyond the average length of the republic lives. And so how do we cheat history? We do it together through visionary leadership that calls people to say, don't you want to have a great future? And aren't you prepared to make some sacrifice now so that your kids can experience and taste the freedoms you've had?
Well, I'll tell you what. Go ahead, Senator. Sorry.
And I believe that most Americans, I talk to seniors all the time. I said, will you give up some of your Medicare and Social Security if you knew your grandkids were going to live in poverty because you don't? And almost uniformly, they say yes.
Right.
You know, Joe Lieberman, I had a plan to fix Medicare. It was a bipartisan plan. It would have put a means test to it to people like me that I actually can afford to buy insurance. I don't have to have Medicare. And we could have fixed Medicare, and Medicare by 2020 would have been solvent. And we couldn't get it to the floor. Not just because Harry Reid wouldn't do it. Mitch McConnell didn't want it on the floor either.
That's sinful in my mind. Just sinful.
Well, it's career politicians
it
is. And they're more interested in their own career than they are the future of the country.
Well, Harry Reid used to make my skin crawl. But Mitch, I could see him with a bourbon and water at a Louisville Cardinal game, too. I just can't. I don't see a lot of ideology there. But I'll tell you what, Senator, I'm going to talk to your people. I'm going to be on radio in a regional capacity in a couple of weeks. I'd love to have you on that show as well. So
I will be back. The book I wrote is Smashing the DC Monopoly. Love for people to read it and learn how we fix our problems.
Well, I'm going to call to your people. We'll do something again with a bigger audience here in a couple of weeks, I hope. So, all right. Thank you
Sounds
so much,
good.
Senator. I appreciate
God bless
it.
You,
hey,
sir.
Go Sooners, huh? All right. There
you
have it.
And Pokes. Both of them.
Pokes. I mean, Cowboys. What?
OSU Cowboys.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, exactly. All right, well, I'd say Roll, but I can't say Roll Tide. That's the wrong state. All right, thank you, Senator.
Well,
appreciate
no,
it.
But you can say go Badgers, right?
Well, go Badgers, of course, goes without saying. So, yeah. All right, well, maybe
right.
You can help Paul
God
Ryan.
God bless you.
All right, thank you very
See
much.
You.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Senator, I love that guy. This guy is the greatest. He's telling you the truth about all this stuff. You don't get that very often. And next, a man who wants to run for governor of this state, Mike McCabe. After a break on the Mitch Hank Show on MadisonTalks.com.
Good research will make you wiser and more successful. If you operate a business, create a product, or provide a service, what don't you know that your customers know? There are multiple answers to that question that will help you realize greater success. Troy Research is a consumer opinion market research company that finds answers to important questions. Where can good research take your business? Call or email to talk about it. Troy Research, 271-8884, or email jlittle@troyresearch.com.
When it comes to telephone on-hold advertising, some commonly asked questions are, why do we need an on-hold message? How do we write a script? How long should the message be? How does the message get played? How much does it cost? I'm Bob of Abella Creative Services, and a telephone on-hold message speaks directly to your target audience while they're on hold with your company. Continuously advertises only your business without the clutter of competitive ads and for just a fraction of conventional advertising costs. At Bob Abella Creative Services, we'll help you draft a well-written script, provide the appropriate announcer, music, course sound effects, and the studio time and expertise to put it all together. We'll also provide you with any special equipment you might need to play your on-hold message. Even though we probably have more experience than most other on-hold message companies, we'll cost you less. Let Bob Abella Creative Services stretch your advertising dollar with an on-hold message that provides your customers with real, actionable solutions to their problems. Bob Abella Creative Services gets results. Just send us an email at bacsgetsresults@gmail.com. That's bacsgetsresults@gmail.com.
This is the all-new Mitch Hank Show.
The great Joe DiMaggio still holds the major league record for the longest hitting streak in 56 games. Bucks Takeout Pizza has a 56-year winning streak for the best thin crust pizza in the city. Bucks Pizza has a unique taste like no other. Handmade pizzas with homemade sauce and homemade sausage. Two Madison locations on University Avenue and Cottage Grove Road. Just go to BucksPizzaMadison.com, BucksPizzaMadison.com.
As life celebrations bring people together, you'll be comforted knowing we have community rooms available for those who wish to serve food and refreshments before, during, or after your gathering. This is Pete Gunderson. We're here to assist with every detail. Learn more at GundersonFH.com. Gunderson Funeral and Cremation Care, your hometown life celebration center.
Gunderson Funeral Home.
Welcome back to the Mitch Hank Show. Mitch seeks the truth by inviting all sides of the issue. Thanks for listening to the Mitch Hank Show.
All right, we're back now. Hard act to follow, but we've got a great guest here, Mike McCabe, who may be running for governor very soon, formerly of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, now Blue Jean Nation, used to be of the school district. Hello, Mr. McCabe. Hello, Mike. Mike McCabe. Well, I think he had a brief. It was kind of like we're doing War of the Worlds. We're getting sound effects here. Mike, are you there? Okay, well, we'll get him in place here. Mike McCabe, who may be announcing as soon as, well, Labor Day or so, but whether he's going to make the run for governor, but we're trying to get him on the mic here. Hello, Mike? Mike. Here's Mike. Mike.
Mitch,
okay.
Mitch, I can hear you.
Oh, good. Got you there, and we... I know Life Goes On. We had some great sound effects a la War of the Worlds there for a minute. It was like the spaceship. Hey, it's good to have you on the show. I'm just curious. We haven't had you on really recently. You're about a month away from making the big announcement, decision. Have we decided yet, or are you still pondering whether to run for governor?
No, it's going to happen, Mitch.
Okay, yeah.
You know, and it'll become official probably second week of September is what we're zeroing in on. And a lot of steps that have to be taken to make a run, and we've taken a number of them already, formed a campaign committee, and so you know, sometime early September it'll become official.
It's kind of exciting,
are terrifying.
Is it fair to say you're a full-fledged progressive, Mike?
Well, you know, I consider myself a commoner. I consider myself a political mutt. I don't belong to any political party, but of course, my work over the years has been as an independent watchdog. I spent decades exposing money in politics and working to try to make democracy healthier. And that work wasn't done for a partisan purpose. So, you know, I am someone who doesn't belong to a political party, but I've reached a point where I think a lot of us are going to have to think about doing some things that we didn't necessarily think of doing before. We're going to have to get outside our comfort zones because we're at a point now where we've got both a political system and an economy that work really well for a wealthy and well-connected few and are failing the rest of the population.
Well, we got to be clear, though. You're going to be running as not an independent. You'll be running as a Democrat, right?
Yeah, I'll be entering the Democratic primary. That's correct.
Well, there you have it. And so I just had Tom Coburn on the show before you came on. He said there's $144 trillion in unfunded liabilities nationwide. But that's so I think we have one political side in this country that talks about unfairness and income inequality and the few having too much. And then we have another side that talks about how government is out of control and we're spending our grandchildren's money. And so we have these two different debates going on. I mean, how do we thread the needle?
Well, you know, the side that you described is saying that government's out of control, you know, is the side that is in control of our state capital right now. And they're saying that we got $3 billion to spend, and they've got a way that they would like to spend that $3 billion. And, you know, they'd like to...
Well, they don't have three... I mean, oh God, you mean for the
well,
budget,
they say,
two-year
they
budget?
They say that we can afford to make that kind of commitment, and that they would like to throw that at a Taiwanese company in hopes that some magic for the state of Wisconsin.
Explain,
my feeling
you're
is that if you're going to spend $3 billion... spend it on the people of Wisconsin. Spend it on empowering people and putting them in a position of being able to do more for themselves and for each other.
How would you spend it, and where would you find the $3 billion?
Oh, there's lots of better uses for $3 billion. You know, if we spent it on health care for all, that would be a better use. If we spent it on bringing internet to every doorstep in our state, that would be a better use. If we spent it to get toward the goal of debt-free education and job training, to make education as affordable for our kids and grandkids as it was for their parents and grandparents, that would be a better use. There are a lot better uses and I think better bets for $3 billion than to throw money at a company that has a track record of broken promises. And what that $3 billion would get us is a few thousand temporary jobs that would eventually be automated out of existence in one part of the state. We should be spending $3 billion on our entire population and empowering people to do more for themselves, freeing them to start new businesses. Healthcare for all would be something that would be incredibly liberating for an awful lot of people who have great ideas, who've dreamed of starting a business, but they're tethered to a job because that's where they get the insurance for their families, and they can't afford to leave it. So you create accessibility to health care for people and detach it from employment, and all of a sudden those people with great ideas who've dreamed of starting a business are in a position to go ahead and do it. And so those are things that could have an incredibly positive effect on our economy, But those are investments in 5 million people in this state, not just a few thousand of the richest and best connected, or one company that comes in and makes a lot of promises.
Well, $3 billion, I could just, you know, for my company, I'd only want about $20,000. I wouldn't want too much. That'd be great.
Right.
I'd work that out. I mean, come on.
And think about how many small businesses could be helped with that kind of money, and how many, you know, how many initiatives in every nook and cranny of the state could be assisted with that kind of money instead of putting all our eggs in one basket.
Okay, I love the help, but the question is, and the argument would be, that if you're hiring up to 13,000 people or whatever, then they pay taxes, and so the tax base grows because they are paying taxes.
And yeah, you know, and the nonpartisan state budget office came out and said, if you look at the tax money that would come in and the expenses that would go out, the cost to taxpayers, it would be at least 25 years before the state would break even. It would be at least 2043 before we, and that would be if all 13,000 jobs ended up materializing and all 13,000 jobs went to people from Wisconsin, and and that's not going to happen. There are going to be an awful lot of people from Illinois who are going to take those jobs.
It's almost a demand side argument, though, because they would have money when they get paid in their checks to buy food and buy beds and buy lawn chairs right away. So therefore, there'd be a trickling effect. So in a sense, the advocates are almost being demand side advocates, aren't they?
No, this is classic trickle down economics. It's about showering tax breaks and state subsidies on a few, and in this case, one
company the workers
from Taiwan,
Mike,
that they'll spin some magic for everybody else.
The workers would get checks, and they would spend their paychecks on stuff. I mean, that's classic.
You know, if all 13,000 jobs were created, and that's a big if, then these are going to be temporary jobs because they're going to be automated out of existence. And this is a technology that would be what they would be producing is a technology that's going to be obsolete in just a few years. That's just the way of that world. But even if all 13,000 jobs did appear, it's still the state budget office still says it'll be at least 2043 before we could break even on this deal.
Well, that sounds like you got it down for your little talking points out there, because a lot of people would be sympathetic given their own circumstances, because they're not going to be on the payroll at Foxconn, just like we had people who weren't on the state payroll who were envious of public employees. Now you have people who are probably going to be envious of Foxconn employees.
Yeah, I was just up in Wisconsin Rapids last night and Bayfield a few nights before. Yeah, people like that aren't going to see any employment
out of this.
But they're going to be paying. They're going to be paying for this.
Hey,
and they're going to be paying for this for a long time.
There's your stump speech. You know, I saw an earlier version. You can always tweak it, you know. So next month we're going to have this big announcement? Or?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, now, you haven't decided on a lieutenant governor yet. Are you just kind of keeping that open?
Well, you know, unlike the presidency where running mates are chosen, of course, the voters really choose the running mate in Wisconsin. The governor gets nominated,
does
the lieutenant governor, and they really only become running mates for the general election. But I'm talking to a lot of people, encouraging a number of people to think about running for lieutenant governor, and I think, you know, the more the merrier.
Oh, yeah, man. I've got a neighbor who might want to run, so I'll talk to you off air about him. Anyway, thank you, Mike McKay. We'll talk again, and are you out state right now, or are you back in the friendly confines?
Back in the friendly confines for the moment, and just got back from Wisconsin Rapids.
All right, go have a cappuccino and head back out.
Thanks,
all
Mitch. Right. Great talking with you, as
Thank
always.
Thank you, Mike. Blue Jean Nation, candidate for governor. He'll make it official in a month or so. Interesting stuff there from Mike. We'll come back with Charles Franklin about Wisconsin, Donald Trump's popularity, Scott Walker and the Democratic candidate and so forth. And then we'll talk about North Korea, because we all could be blown up. We'll talk about... Now, I don't mean that. I don't want us to be. We're not going to glow in the dark. Let's just hope that doesn't happen. The Mitch Hanks Show on MadisonTalks.com.
Two Bridges was one of the toughest neighborhoods in New York. Especially in the Al Smith projects. It was a no man's land with no rules. On Christmas Eve 1951, Mac Pastamadeo vanished without a trace while walking home with his little boy Angelo. Now 13, Angelo is a gang member and the only witness to the brutal murder of an undercover cop who holds a clue to Mac's disappearance 6 years ago. Stalked by killers, Angelo becomes part of an unlikely alliance of a priest, a mob boss, and a police detective in order to uncover the truth behind the murder and Mac's disappearance. Weepers by Nick Chiarkis.
If you operate a business, you know there is no one-size-fits-all solution for today's technology challenges. MadisonGeeks.com plans, services, and installs technologies for small and medium businesses like network systems, servers, firewalls, wireless access points, telecommunications, security, remote service options, and business productivity solutions. MadisonGeeks.com is your IT staff. They take time to sit down and discuss your needs and present cost-effective solutions. With a Better Business Bureau A-plus rating, they are your trusted IT outsource partner. Expect less downtime. Faster resolutions lead to more productivity. Fewer day-to-day issues. Their proactive maintenance helps prevent issues from occurring. MadisonGeeks.com also offers computer and laptop service and repair. Madison Geeks are there to help. They're known for their candid, friendly approach and reliable, ready response. Check them out online at MadisonGeeks.com.
Talk radio will never be the same. The uncommon sense of Mitch Hank has been unleashed worldwide. This is the all-new Mitch Hank Show.
Mitch Hank for Atterbury Cameron Haig.
I'm proud to be sitting next to senior partner and a man who's been voted Wisconsin's super lawyer multiple times, Eric Haig. Eric, is it true you've never taken a check from a client in 20 years?
We only get paid if we win, and 20 years of practicing law, I've never had a client to have to pay me for their time.
You don't take every case. Quality over quantity?
Some of the bigger firms that do a lot of advertising are trying to take in as many cases as they can, as fast as they can. We actually reject more cases than we accept. We're trying to take a case where we can give it the time it deserves to be properly managed and litigated to get it ready for trial. Once you get beyond that number, the quality can suffer. So we're looking to provide high-quality legal service, and it's not about the numbers. We want to do those cases that we do have right.
So when you need a lawyer, do what I did. Call Atterbury, Cameron, Haig and reach them at yourwisconsininjurylawyers.com. That's yourwisconsininjurylawyers.com.
Welcome to the Mitch Hank Show, originating four blocks from Wisconsin's capital. Mitch is the radio voice of uncommon sense. All sides of an argument are welcome here. Just be prepared to make one, as Mitch argues for truth, not victory. Politics, lifestyle, pop culture are all on the table. So get ready to participate on the Mitch Hank Show.
All right, we've had all stars tonight. We go from Tom Coburn to Mike McCabe, now another all-star, Charles Franklin, famous pollster and political science professor, Marquette Law School. How are you, Professor?
I'm great, Mitch. Glad to be here.
We're in the tall cotton tonight. I'll tell you what, I mean, Tom Coburn threw out the fact that we have $144 trillion in unfunded liabilities. I hadn't heard that number yet. That's a big number.
It is a big number. You're beginning to talk about real money.
You and I could start a bake sale. We still wouldn't cut into that, I don't think. But
Not so much.
But then we had Mike McCabe, who's in the cast of characters. He actually said he's going to run for governor for even a month before his announcement. So we have Mike and Paul Soglin and the guy from Milwaukee, whose name always escapes me, the businessman. Mm-hmm. Then we have Kathleen Vinehout and so forth. Your thoughts on that? Do we have any early indicators on a challenger to the governor?
Well, I think the most important thing is how many people are seriously talking about it, or, as with McCabe, is essentially saying they're going to run. That's in contrast to 2014, where even the talked-about field was pretty narrow, and then it rapidly narrowed down to just one candidate. I think it raises an interesting question of whether these folks will all stay in through a Democratic primary or not, or whether they'll test the waters and then drop out sometime next year. But I do think it's interesting that we see as many Democratic candidates testing the waters or actually tossing their hat in the ring compared to what we saw in 2014.
Yeah, well, you know, the dynamic, I wonder if it, because Donald Trump obviously did well or did better than in past years in rural Wisconsin because Democrats seem to now be clinging to urban areas to a great degree. And so they're not getting some of the outstate, quote, outstate votes. I wonder how that dynamic could be the same, different, heading into the next cycle?
Boy, this midterm in 2018 is going to be really hard to handicap for two reasons. One is that midterms in Wisconsin normally favor Republicans. Democratic turnout tends to be considerably higher in a presidential year and then drop off in a midterm. However, remember, Democratic turnout dropped a bit in Milwaukee, for example, this year compared to with Obama in 2012. So maybe that'll mitigate how much it falls off going into this midterm. The flip side is that the president's party almost always suffers losses in midterm elections. And so that's a force that would work against Republicans. How do those two forces balance out? That's something I and every other observer of elections is going to be trying to figure out between now and November 2018. But it's two competing forces, and on top of that, the incumbency of the governor, who the challengers are, and goodness knows what may happen between now and then.
I wonder how much longevity can work against you. I mean, they canceled Bonanza after 14 years. Even Amos and Andy got canceled. And, you know, Governor Walker, he's been around for, I mean, he's been on the stage for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I covered him 20 years ago when he was a state rep from Wauwatosa.
Right.
And here he is. He's been around since 2010 in the mansion. Go ahead.
He spent virtually his entire adult life in elective office of one office or another, coming up on 8 years as governor. Now he's aiming to stretch that out to 12 years as governor. Of course, Tommy Thompson did it and was elected to a fourth term. So it's an interesting thing. Wisconsin does have a bit of a habit of electing governors, Thompson for an especially long time. But senators have often served fairly lengthy terms with lots of reelections. So throwing incumbents out of office, yeah, we've done that. Russ Feingold in 2010, and Feingold himself defeated an incumbent back in 92.
Mm-hmm.
But it does mean that longevity is maybe a bit of a plus here. I think with Governor Walker, the real question is his approval numbers really sank quite low into the 30s while he was running for president and also dealing with a difficult budget a little over 2 years ago.
Got one now.
And now he's got some budget problems. We don't have a budget. You know, I guess you could say, well, Illinois went 3 years without a budget. Maybe Wisconsin can be more like Illinois.
Oh, good Lord.
But it's an odd situation for a governor who has made big promises about having fixed our fiscal problems within the state.
Uh-huh.
But that said, his approval numbers have recovered a fair bit. In our poll, we had him at 48% approved, 48% disapproved last month. That's the best he's done since the time of his reelection in 2014. So there's some recovery there, but maybe there's some underlying weakness as well.
You know, he will always be running on Act 10 in a way. I mean, because it did pit those who were on the payroll against those who are not, and there are a lot more people who are not. I mean, isn't that just the way it is? I mean, going forward with him, will he always carry that moniker on his shoulder?
Oh, I think so. And for both good and bad for him, his backers are deeply pleased by that. And his opponents will never forgive him for it.
No, no.
And so in that, I think politics in the state around him have kind of been frozen by the events of the spring of 2011 during the Act 10 debate and ultimate passage.
I mean, I hate to compare it to Chappaquiddick, but I mean, Teddy Kennedy was never going to win in my home state because you'd go in the bookstore and see all those books on him. I mean, just there's a certain scarlet letter that goes onto a politician. So,
well, I think so, though. With Kennedy, that's pretty much all negative. With Walker, it's good with one
well, no, set that's of right. Yeah,
and I mean, bad with another.
Exactly. I didn't mean to compare the two, but I think you knew what I was going to. Yeah.
But reputations do last for some
politicians. Right, that was the point, yeah.
And Act 10 was truly a defining moment for Walker, one that he's run on ever since.
Well, that's right.
Ran for president, basically.
To me, it's Nixon. It's the silent majority play. You know, you always play to the... Because if you're playing to a majority, you win. I mean, he's winning. He wins 3-2. We'll come back. Can you stay for one more quick second?
Absolutely.
All right,
absolutely.
President Charles Franklin, The Mitch Hanks Show on MadisonTalks.com, Facebook Live.
Joe here from Comedy on State. Hey, looking for something different to do with your friends? You got friends in town, maybe you're celebrating something. Comedy on State is a thing that you want to think of. It should be at least the third thing that pops into your mind. MadisonComedy.com is where you can go to find a complete schedule. Any comics that you could think of, we've had.
For a list of upcoming Comedy Club performers or to purchase tickets, go to MadisonComedyClub.com and click shows. Performer bios are available by clicking on their pictures.
That's Comedy on State. MadisonComedy.com or 256-0099.
In real estate, you want to work with Tim Rail.
Tim had a plan whether we should look at a new house, an older style house, and right away he knew what we were looking for and what would be in our best interest.
Let's get ink on paper today with Realtor Tim Rail of Coldwell Banker Success, 698-7653.
He was jolly, good-natured, and so thoughtful, and he's charismatic as well.
Tim Rail, 698-7653.
The all-new Mitch Hanks Show would like to thank our sponsors. We're grateful for their support of the all-new Mitch Hanks Show.
At P3 Pro, we're invested in creating a dynamic video experience for our clients. Everything from planning, shooting, and editing your events, commercials, webcasts, or films. P3 Pro has 27 years of industry standard experience, working to make your vision a reality. We stand apart from your traditional run-of-the-mill production experience and create memorable, moving, breathtaking imagery that conveys your message in a powerful way. We take your vision and turn it into a work of art. The art of storytelling, the art of beautifully crafted imagery, the art of persuasion. Visit us on the web at p3pro.xyz or call 608-571-3776. That's 608-571-3776.
6AM Marketing is a Wisconsin-based ad agency that doesn't look or act like other ad agencies. They don't follow conventional thinking and constantly push themselves and their clients to test the bounds of how far they can go. The result is relationships that have lasted more than 10 years. Clients refer to 6AM and their work as fresh, insightful, strategic, edgy, and creative. 6AM shows customers why your products and services are better than the competition. 6AM's brand smart process helps you establish your brand in the market for years to come. With a client's marketing team by its side, 6AM digs for the business problem the client is trying to solve and the business goals and objectives they hope to achieve, examining the market, competitors, the brand's consumers, and messaging to define a brand proposition that is both compelling and unique to the market. 6AM Marketing. They do it differently, and they do it well. Go to 6ammarketing.com. That's www.6ammarketing.com.
Welcome back to the Mitch Hanks Show. Mitch seeks the truth by inviting all sides of the issue. Thanks for listening to the Mitch Hanks Show.
Charles Franklin, extraordinary pollster, political scientist. Your calls as well. 210-1667. That's 210-1667. Now we get to El Presidente. they were talking about a CNN poll had him at 38, which to me was higher than his 33 I saw last week. But he's never really been too far removed from 38, has he? I mean, in a year or so?
Yeah, a little bit. I've actually looked at that today. If you look at the last week or so, the polls have ranged from a low of 33 to a high of 42. But the average has been about 36, and we've seen several 36, 37, 38s. I looked at how many polls are above 40% and how many are below 40% for him. And out of 23 polls so far this month, only three have been at 40 or above, just 13%, putting him over 40. In contrast, almost half, about 40%, had him over 40 in June and July. And the first month he was in office, it was 96% that had him over 40. So we're seeing some real sign of decline, but people shouldn't exaggerate. What we're really seeing is the average approval coming down about 1% per month since he's been in office.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, some of that has got to be the drop with the Republicans because of the failure of health care, a big high-profile item. Come on, let's face it. It's got to be part of that.
Exactly. And there's both disappointment with that. Some of it is disappointment with Trump, and some of it's disappointment with the Republicans in Congress. Trump certainly has had his troubles with Mitch McConnell, including a tweet this afternoon criticizing McConnell and Republicans in Congress. That's sort of rare for a president to criticize his own party like that. But I think it reflects the frustration among the Trump voting base that Trump's initiatives aren't moving through Congress. There are a lot of reasons for that, but he's reflecting an anger among his strongest supporters there.
Right. I wonder if he goes into kamikaze mode, if he plays a game of chicken on health care and lets it implode and lets more insurers leave and people are going to be dying on the vine. I mean, even those words hurt Bob Dole in 96 about Newt Gingrich. But, I mean, if Trump just says, hey, I'm going to push this to the brink and force a deal, and if I don't pull it off, screw it. I'm out of here. I'm going back to my tower.
Well, he could do that. I think the big gamble there would be that he would force Congress to take action that Congress doesn't want to do, and that he Trump, and for that matter, Republicans, would not be blamed if the Obamacare system collapses completely. I think that's a very high-stakes gamble.
Well, it is. So the key to that is not caring if you run again, right?
I agree with that.
Yeah.
Though one other key is having some replacement in mind. And I think what we learned over the spring and summer is that Republicans in both the House and the Senate lacked a plan that they had all pretty much agreed on, and instead they were trying to cobble something together on the fly. And at the same time, Donald Trump, who's promised cheaper and cover more people and it's going to be so much better, has turned out not to have a plan of his own ready to put before the Congress. So it's one thing to call for change or legislation,
right?
But if your party doesn't have that legislation ready, and you don't have that legislation ready, it's not at all clear what voters are supposed to rally behind.
I found one Republican in the entire process who sounded good, and that was the senator from Louisiana. I'm trying to think of his name, but he was like a doctor, and he was hitting the issues in a way that made sense, but he's about the only one.
Yeah, I think we've gone through this period where health care, if I can drag you all the way back to March, remember health care was alive, then it was dead, then it was resurrected, then it passed the House, then it sat around the Senate for a while, then it looked dead, then they brought it back, and now it is dead. Boy, this really is the zombie.
Yeah, but what was it is the point. My point is nobody knew what it was. Bill Cassidy is the guy I'm thinking about. He was the only guy that sounded good on the whole thing for the But no, because you had people in the town halls who were being subsidized And they might pay $30 a month, and their husband had five surgeries, and they were in tears. I mean, that's what we saw on the news at the town halls.
I think that's right, and it reflects one of the things about town halls is the people that are exercised show up at town halls. Flash back to 2010, and it was Tea Party voters that were showing up at those town halls and were mad as hell. Now the shoe's on the other foot,
The
beneficiaries of Obamacare that are showing up.
Well, what if the Republicans said, okay, well, like Bill Clinton said, the person's out there busting it 60 hours a week, is seeing triple the premium and so forth, but the people who are getting subsidized are avoiding the pain. So
right.
You could almost do the us versus them deal on the other side, or is that not smart politically?
Well, it is, but it because there certainly is some degree of anger that as someone who's not subsidized in buying their own insurance through Obamacare,
right.
People feel like their rates are high, their choices are limited.
Yeah, they're not
they
happy.
Don't feel like they're getting a good deal. But the polling shows that is not yet translating into a big demand that we start throwing people off of Medicaid,
right.
Which is the other biggest part of the expansion.
Well, I call it Obamacade because the people that went on the exchanges were like 11 million, and the CEO said it'd be 24 million. Most of the people got coverage through Medicaid, so
right.
That's why I call it Obamacade. But the lack of Tea Party-ish type recoiling at the healthcare system seems to be reflected by the fact that aren't most people still in group health plans through work, and they really haven't seen the rubber hit the road yet?
Yeah, this is the irony of Obamacare as a whole, is that we covered 65% of the population or 70% through work-based employment insurance.
Well, we did that before.
We do that now. What we really did was cover a fair number of people, about 10% more, who had no coverage at all. Most of those were moved into Medicaid,
exactly,
point. But a significant number of million are on individual plans through the Obamacare exchanges, and those are the plans that have had the greatest difficulty, the most turnover. And if you're in a subsidized plan, you've been sheltered from the rate increases. But if you're not getting that subsidy because your income's too high, then those rate increases are really hitting you hard. So it's a fairly small percentage of the population.
Right.
But that percentage is being hit really hard after they were promised that this was going to be a government-sponsored plan that would make your health care better by Obama and the Democrats.
Well, but the outrage that sparked Reagan with the quote-unquote welfare and food stamp fraud stuff has not hit here. I mean, there isn't the same Archie Bunker-type phenomenon yet on this.
So far, it's not showing up that way in the polling. You might think there's certainly anecdotes that talk about folks struggling to pay for their health plan and envying or being angry at their poorer neighbors who are getting covered through Medicaid. That is a potential.
I'm glad that's not happening, but I mean, I haven't seen that as much.
No, and the polling shows that has not translated into a big group of people saying we should just throw people off Medicaid. I think the real thing, we saw this before Obamacare, and we see it now, is people would like everybody to be covered, but most important, people wish their health insurance costs went down.
Right.
And that's not something that Obamacare largely accomplished.
So,
and it's not something the Republican plans would accomplish either.
No, that has not happened. But so unless more people just get left on the street because the insurers pull out, which starts to affect that great bulk of people who have been enjoying group health plans,
right.
And they just are told by their employers, sorry, we're out of business, or you're out of luck. Unless we see something like that happening fairly soon and in a large number, we're not going to see much reaction.
Exactly. And I think the scenario you're talking about, that business-sponsored plans would go away, that's really unlikely. What we're seeing is insurers are pulling out of the Obamacare exchanges in counties around the country.
Uh-huh.
But that only affects this fairly small percentage of the
10%,
voters that,
right?
That buy on those exchanges. So unless something more drastic, exactly your point, unless something more drastic happened to a much wider swath of the public,
correct.
I think we're talking about anger about a program that doesn't work. And a lot of finger-pointing about whose fault it is.
Well, and if they get dumped from their insurance coverage through exchanges, through subsidies, they would just go on Medicaid, right? I mean,
I don't know what would happen there. I think that's one of the big unknowns about standing by and whistling while the system collapses, as opposed to having a plan to actually deal with it. The irony is there are a lot of very serious conservative analysts that have worked on this, but the Congress simply wasn't ready to accept any of their
proposals. It wasn't done organically from the ground up. But I'll tell you, in the scenario you're talking about, Trump would end up hurting more of his own voters in the process because of that 10%. There are got to be some Trump voters in there who patrolled those Walmart parking lots with the T-shirts. I'm sorry to be...
Every analysis I see shows that it's Trump voters who are more likely to be hurt by the collapse of Obamacare. Whether they would blame him or blame Obama or blame that guy behind the tree, I don't know.
So that means the group health people haven't seen much of a change, and whatever increases they've experienced, it's commensurate with what it was before the bill passed.
Correct.
All right,
or
so
even a little lower, in fact. But health costs go up, and that's one of the big dilemmas here. None of these plans, including Obamacare, ultimately brought about any genuine reductions in cost.
Oh, no, certainly not. But it kind of reminds me of Sam Kinison, the late comedian. Remember, he said, well, if you want your girlfriend to leave you, just quit your job, but don't shower for a couple of weeks and let your beard grow. And she leaves! Well, in this case, I'll just lose all my, have no money, forget about employment, and just become so poor I have to get into an exchange coverage plan.
And just like having your girlfriend leave you, it comes with some bad side effects.
Well, at least I could watch Columbo reruns. I'd be fine. Maybe I'll call you and we'll go over the Barbara Jordan speech in 76 and talk about it.
Sounds great. That was a hell of a speech.
Yes, it was. And only you and I would know about it. That's the sad thing.
Exactly.
Professor, we thank you so much.
Thank you, Mitch.
All right, take care. We'll talk to you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Two peas in a pod. John Zimrick, what about Debbie Wasserman Schultz? We got to do a little conspiracy stuff. Not a lot, just a little bit coming up. And her IT guy who got arrested and what it means. What it means to the Russia investigation, if anything. The Mitch Hanks Show on MadisonTalks.com.